This is the January 2 edition of Commodity Week. Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jerry Goodell. He's with Midland Research out of Chicago, Illinois. Sherman Newlin is here from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Joe Vaklovic with Standard Grain is joining us from Gallatin, Tennessee. And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting is in Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. I know there'll be a list of things maybe that each of you want to talk about, though we're at the very beginning of the year, so it may be short. Let's start with you, Jerry Goodell. Got an item we should take up today?
Well, of course we have this big-time report coming coming up next week, and of course that's going to be interesting here, looking at home final production numbers, how the yields have come out. We get all this Northern Plains situation and how that finally wrapped itself up there. And then, of course, are we going to be able to know what kind of trade deal? Hopefully that's going to be another important factor. This trade situation, there's no way in heck they're ever going to get $40 million, but I'm not sure really anybody cares. At this point, it's better than the $9 million or $10 million we've had so far this year. So if we get 30, that's fantastic. So I think that's the other thing. That it is kind of amazing how the trade and the futures have improved themselves over since December's crop report here, slowly raising from the dead.
All right, so Sherman Newlin, we have the crop production report, the situation in the plains, we have the phase one trade deal. What did he leave out? Anything?
I can say not much, really. I mean, pretty well.
That's why I repeated them all.
I guess maybe what will farmers do here in the next 2 weeks, you know, because we are going to have a lot of information thrown out at us here with the report and with the phase one deal. I think I'm really kind of curious to see what all is going to be in the, if we ever find out all the details of the phase one trade deal, because that could make quite a bit of difference on price projections going forward this year, and what farmers are going to need to be trying to do as far as getting some stuff hedged, hopefully at a lot more profitable levels.
Hey, Joe Vaklovic, anything on your list that we missed?
The trade deal or supposed trade deal and the report. I mean, those are your two big items. I would talk a little bit about what's driven the rally in the soybean market. I don't know that it's necessarily optimism. I actually think it's fear. It's a short covering rally. Open interest is down 18% since December 6th. It's been a short covering event largely, and I think the funds don't want to stick around to find out whether or not this is the real deal. And my fear, I think, is that if we don't get what we want in that trade deal, if the details don't quite add up to what some people had expected, that we could very quickly go back in the other direction. That's one concern that I have.
Well, I think I will drop that right into Dan Zwicker's lap, because on Thursday afternoon, Dan, when I talked to you during the closing market report, you kind of alluded to this just a little bit, that the beans didn't feel all that great to you and that the technicals might have a problem. I suppose that could be because there's not much underpinning them. Is that the right way to read what you told me?
We've had a good rally, I mean, off of our seasonal lows. I guess I'm one of these people that, you know, you buy the rumor, sell the news. And, you know, Trump did announce that we're going to have an official signing of phase one, but the market has already known that, and that's priced into the market. So I guess my question is, you know, is this kind of the short-term top of maybe the commodity complex, and then we go into the winter doldrums, and then we'll see how South America unfolds, and we'll see how trade unfolds, and I guess we'll, you know, start taking a look at what everybody thinks on 2020 as far as weather goes.
Now, I know that earlier in the week I saw a list of what was supposedly in the phase one trade deal with some numbers to it. I don't recall them, and I didn't write that down. Does that make much of a difference to the marketplace, Sherman, and when it sees a list of numbers? And again, that's kind of, I often wonder, is that actual free trade too? But that's a whole different discussion, I suppose.
That's
over
true.
Time.
I mean, I think, you know, trying to see some of the details, you know, whether it's going to be some more corn or ethanol, or DDGs, or whether they're going to import some wheat. I think those will make a difference. Now, you know, we obviously need to see them follow through and actually do some of these things that they're supposedly going to be talking about. But, you know, I agree with, you know, the other guys, Joe and Dan. I mean, if the numbers come out or the details come out and they're not what we're hoping for or looking at, then, you know, we probably have a lot of this priced in. And I am a little bit concerned about markets starting to fall back off once it's announced. Because, like you said, I think, like Dan said, I think, you know, the trade's been pricing a lot of this in. So I think farmers need to, you know, really be on their toes here in the next few weeks and hopefully, you know, get some stuff sold.
I think Jerry Goodell and Joe Vaclavic, I'd like you both to take this up from the perspective that each of you have been in Chicago and watched this happen at the CME Group. And Jerry, you've been around a long time, and Joe, you've been around for a while. so I want to see if there's a difference of opinion here. Jerry, how do you feel about this trade deal and how the market has reacted so far and what it will do in the future?
Well, the initial reaction, of course, is skepticism, particularly with the number being so substantially higher than it was thrown out, early October, when this is all going to start, that there was a potential number, but nobody really paid attention. Then it keeps coming back at us 40, maybe 50 million. I'm not sure that the key thing, this whole thing is how many bushels will that create in our particular corn and soybeans. Now, we'd all think about the fact that beans, definitely there's a logic they should buy from part of us from us. The other thing is that the corn side of things, they really have a lot of corn. I still think there's going to be an ethanol situation that's going to substantially go up. I still think that DDGs are still going to expand. That's where the corn demand situation is going to be helpful. And that's part of the thing that's going to help support corn as we go forward, that type of thing. Definitely a little cautionary, though. We have had a, you know, six, 7 week kind of a rally in here. I'm recommending people to be up against this $3.95 to $4 to move up some more corn sales. Even surprisingly, it's not a bad move to start looking at new crop out there at the 410 zone, 408, 410. Those are things to look at. Soybeans, I don't know. Surprisingly, I am more optimistic about. I'm not so aggressively thinking about new crop. I think you got to move up some beans on this. I don't. The thing about it is that if you think about where we're at on production numbers here, if we start moving down, I'm doing 35, 40. I don't know if we're going to get 50. Some slight decline in the total bushels in that. And then turn around, can this USDA and this administration, with the trade deal coming out or substantially looking in front of it, can they not at least increase U.S. exports on beans? Yeah, we're running pretty good. And I realize people think that it's a mirage and it's all going to fall apart. But in reality is that we're ahead of last year's schedule, and if we come around and put 50 million on, we could be down potentially below 400 million bushels. And that's an interesting level. We haven't been that way in quite a while. And I think that's, something about the bean side of this thing. Everybody's been so negative on it, and I included, you know, in this thing. You might want to give that beans a little bit more push, but I think, yeah, if we had something to give you some $10 futures beans out here, taking the 10% and get started is not a bad move. But I don't want to go out there and just pummel it, because I got a strange feeling that corn might not be 95 million acres and we might be closer to 92. And we turn around and beans, I don't know, unless we get to 88 or 89, will we overproduce this coming year. So I guess I'm floating around in that world, if that makes any sense to the what we're going to deal with on prices on longer term. But at the same time, this is a scenario after this kind of rally. You don't want to sit around and say, oh, God, it's going to be great and dandy, because as we all know, we still haven't feel good about how this thing is really going to lay out. And the biggest problem is I think it's going to be 6 months from now is when we're really going to know if this thing is going to work.
Joe Vaclavic, any follow-up? And then I was just thinking, you know, he mentioned the 400 or 455 or whatever our carryover is at the moment. And gosh, $9 and 455 or 400 million bushel carryouts didn't seem like that should ever be possible, but we've been there for a while now.
So if the Chinese purchases come to fruition and for some reason China decides to buy U.S. beans, when they normally don't, which would be after South American harvest. They decide to buy them, you know, not seasonally, and they decide to buy them at not competitive prices, both of which are things that they've said that they're not going to do, then there's explosive upside in the bean market. I mean, if for some reason they decide to abandon what they've told us before, which is we're not buying non-competitive prices, we don't want to distort our local markets, they abandon all of that stuff that we've heard them say before, then, yeah, you've got potentially explosive upside here. You know, it wasn't long ago where the bean market traded a $3 range in a calendar year, just about every year. And it's since the trade war that the large speculator has had his foot on the throat of the bean market for the last 2 years. And it's been very difficult for us to see that kind of volatility. But I think if you get back to a situation where China's in the market and buys an excessive amount of beans, which is basically what the U.S. has told us right now, I mean, you've got the chance at a $10, $11, $12 bean market. But I'm still really skeptical of the whole thing because, like I said, China, you've heard nothing from China except for that we're not going to buy non-competitive beans. We're not going to distort our markets. I just don't know how you do record bean purchases amid African swine fever and make that happen. It all just doesn't add up to me right now.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. So AFS is still there. They have not recovered from it. And then, of course, this is the time of the year, Joe, that they would begin to start to buy from South America, though the Brazilians look like they may be moving their crop into a droughty situation. What are you hearing from them?
I've heard weather issues here and there, but I don't think it's going to be anything catastrophic. And I think that it's going to be a big crop. It's going to be available for export, and it's going to be competitive. So does China stray from their what they've told us? I don't know. Maybe that's what we see in the trade deal, and maybe we don't. And that's why the devil is really going to be in the details here. I mean, is it really a firm commitment? There's never been a trade deal in the history of the world, as far as I know, where you get a firm dollar commitment of what's going to be bought. It's usually, you know, tariffs are dropped or we make things a more favorable business trade environment. But, I mean, there's not any precedent for a trade deal like the U.S. is talking about. I still really have my doubts that China's going to sign this thing the way that they say they're going to sign it.
So, Dan, I want to come back to you on this now, because we have to deal with the soybean situation in South America, which would be an export situation. We also have in corn, especially for these USDA numbers that are coming out next week on Friday, to deal with the Northern Plains, along with Wisconsin and Michigan, not so much Minnesota, but just a whole bunch of corn that is still standing. And North Dakota has had as much snow now as they annually do each and every winter, and they've still got 3 months of winter to go. So I'm wondering how the basis levels react across the United States, because we have a great big hole in South Dakota where there was Prevent Plant, a great big hole in northern Indiana, northeastern Indiana, northwestern Ohio, and stuff has to move around in a different way. What does your intuition tell you about what will happen?
First of all, you need to come down here to the Rio Grande Valley, and I got a Mexican bar to go to across the border, and we're going to talk about free trade. How such a fallacy free trade is. But no, I mean, what it's doing, I mean, the ethanol industry or the ethanol plants located throughout the Corn Belt, if they're caught in an area that had a short crop, they have to buy X amount of bushels of corn every day to keep that ethanol plant grinding. And of course, that is what you're seeing in a lot of these areas. I mean, Ohio has a lot of ethanol plants, and then they end up, the Eastern Corn Belt ends up on the short side of the equation on corn production. And then of course, there's a lot of ethanol plants up there in Dakotas and Iowa and whatnot. And if they're in one of those areas that, I didn't raise a lot of corn. I got a brother that buys, you know, corn for an ethanol plant up in Wisconsin. And it's just a constant chore for these ethanol plants to keep enough grain coming in to keep the grind going. A lot of them are starting to come up with a lot of different, you know, kind of contract to encourage that movement. So it's just that's the way it's going to be, at least for right now. I'm concerned. We'll see what USGA comes up with here a week from Friday, but I'm not going to have a very high comfort level on their production number because so much of it is going to be based upon estimates of corn that's still left out in the field and estimates of acres that still need to be harvested. So I'm not going to be real comfortable with whatever USGA comes up with, but it, you know, whatever they come up with, we have to live with it until we see something different. My guess is that, you know, in certain instances, certain places where, you know, that could force the corn market to kind of pop, you know, 20 cents somewhere here along the line to try to get some corn into the system, even with some of these wider basis levels in many areas, especially in the West. I mean, the best basis levels, of course, is in the East. The wide basis levels are in the West.
Sherman, have you talked with enough farmers in those northern regions to have an idea of whether they know what that crop will be like when they pull it out of the field?
I mean, they're telling me, you know, they're leaving a lot of it stand because the elevators right now really don't want it. I mean, here a couple of weeks ago, I talked to a fellow in Minnesota, and it was 29% moisture and 42-pound test weight. So the farmers were electing to, you know, leave it stand at the moment. And then, of course, the guys in North Dakota, they don't have much of a choice with the blizzard that they've been having. I think, you know, I've been hearing and talking to some guys, and you know, some of them are talking like already they're looking at, you know, having a problem next spring, you know, one, getting this crop out, and two, getting the next crop in. So I think that could be a situation that they're, you know, going to have to deal with come springtime. So I don't know. I don't think we're going to have necessarily the high corn acres that some are thinking. I don't necessarily think all these CP acres are going to go to the corn. I think some probably went to a little bit of wheat. I think, you know, guys are looking at expenses and whatnot. So I'm in that 92, 93 million, maybe 94 million acres on corn for next year. But to me, that kind of depends on what the price of beans do between now and then too, between next spring. But I think the situation up there is going to be a pretty big problem for the guys up north. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see how the spring, you know, weather unfolds, but, you know, and go from there.
So Joe Vaclavic, USDA surveying some 80,000 producers, trying to get a handle on what they believe yields were for many crops, along with what they think will happen with the crop that is standing in the field. And they'll also be taking, and this is mostly a census as opposed to a survey, of the amount of grain, corn, and soybeans that is in storage across the United States. That'll show up in the grain stocks report on the same day, January 10th, next Friday. What do you think it will show?
I don't know what to think about the stocks number. I mean, it's really a tough deal. I mean, there's been this whole debate about, you know, how they're going to account for the corn that's still in the field and how they're going to account for the late harvest. I really don't have a clue, and I haven't seen the pre-trade estimates, but it's all going to come down to what the production number was, I guess, and that's really the big thing that could shift the stocks numbers. I mean, you get the feed demand number, which is always kind of a wild card, and nobody ever has a great feel for it, and that can be a surprise sometimes. But, I don't have a great feel for the stocks, and I don't have a great feel for the production either. I mean, in any other year, I'd say, you know, something, there's no precedent for a big shift in January. It just doesn't happen. But this year was so different. I'm not going to say that a big shift in the production is impossible. I don't think I'm leaning that way, but it's anything's possible this year.
All right, I'd like to poll you, and I'll start Jerry Goodell with you because I just need to know. And soybeans you can talk about if you want, but I want to know if producers, for corn in particular, need to wait past January 10 and or past January 15. How long do they wait before they make some kind of decision?
Well, that's a... I'd probably say this... so much more depends on the fundamentals here, the numbers in front of us on the corn. and soybean type situation. From the standpoint of the corn production number, I'm pushing out a number right around 150 million down. That's a combination of some reduction in yields, in acres, about a couple hundred thousand from there and harvested. This is getting back to this whole harvested issues and how much will or won't be there. And then also about a bushel and a half down on yield from there. And the one key feature in here, and hopefully the USDA has learned something from what this happened to them last September, is that they will not have the greatest test weight in the world in their estimate. That's really about the only way we can point to how that was so dramatically changed last September on what our carryover stock was. And all the reports we've heard about the test weights we just talked about, 42%, 42 pounds. Right now, 50 and 48, definitely plenty of those around west of I-35 here at this point. So that, to me, is the real big interesting feature there on the corn. If we do get a number that's on my side of the ledger and that, and also I think the feed demand number, last year we had a pretty solid kind of number. It became a smaller number in comparison to the end of the year when we had the big adjustment in our feed number last summer, which doesn't make sense, as we all know, to have that high a number because it was really the crop just wasn't there. Now, hopefully, that this I sense we're going to have a better number, because would you agree that anybody in this that we've had all the way through this summer, maybe the foreign buyers went to Brazil and bought their corn. The feed users in this country bought U.S. They should have been scared, and it was scary. And so I think we've had a big number of stuff pushed into inventory on the livestock side. And I think that's going to create a little bit of enthusiasm and realize that our feed number that the USDA is using is too low for the coming year. Now they're going to reduce last year's number. We hope they're going to adjust this whole crop size on this number too, by the way, not wait till next September. They kind of alluded to that opportunity. I hope they do. If that is the case, then we'll get a better sense of what we should be looking at for yield trends and a few other things going into 2020. But the reality of it is, if that one comes down in a couple of, well, I was 200, 250 million for last year to get that number in sync with what reality was, something below 174 for yield. And then we have a 165 yield. Now, all of a sudden, this 178 that the baseline number is thrown out here just will not make sense. I hope that is the case and it gets it down to 73, 74. But, you know, lots of different things. I've ran through a whole bunch of numbers. Nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. But in reality of it is that this corn number is going to be quite interesting. It's going to tell us so many stories about so many different things. And even today's November crush statistics on corn showed that we had a poor quality crop for the second month, and the October and November numbers are substantially smaller conversion rates than what we had in September.
All right, Sherman, I'm going to go with he says wait at least for the January 10, and since he didn't mention anything about January 15, he's not too worried about that, and maybe it's just built into the marketplace. How about with you, Sherman?
For corn, I think, you know, we're looking at charts. Corn hasn't really popped up near as much as beans and wheat have. I'd like to give it a little bit more of a chance if we could get into that 410 area again. I think producers, you know, with pretty good basis through here probably need to be selling some old crop. You know, that's going to give you a 415 around here, 420 possibly type cash corn sale for old crop corn. I think you've got to, you know, get some stuff done. And if you're worried about it going higher after the 15th, to see what that, you know, phase one trade deal, if it gets signed, but then might say, you know, buy some options, buy some options in here right now, going forward, you know, maybe to cover what you're going to sell, on old crop corn. So I think guys need to take a hard look at it, because if the deal is not what we thought it might be, or they don't do anything bullish in the report, or, you know, God forbid they say something bearish in the USDA report, you know, it's going to hurt the corn market. The other side of the coin with corn is we haven't been exporting near as much as what we, you know, have been in the past. So that's really going to be weighing on this market. And I think that's kind of one reason we haven't really popped up like the other two commodities have. So I think guys need to take a look at that. Maybe start, you know, stretching out, doing some new crop stuff. I would look at, you know, getting 10% done if you wanted to. Don't have a problem with that. And then maybe do another 10% with some put options, some sort of option strategy there for corn. So kind of, you know, and beans kind of the same way. I like, you know, another 15, 20 cents up in beans. If you got old beans, I think you need to take a hard look at selling some of those. And, you know, we got over 980 today in November beans. I think you got a, you know, another 10, 15, 20 cents. Got to seriously start looking at that because basis levels aren't horrible going into the new crop. So I think guys need to, you know, try and look at that and get something done.
So I'll summarize yours as if it gets to 410, I'll look to make some sales, whether mm-hmm. it's before or after the Friday, January 10 report. And again, you talked a little bit about the 15th, but not terribly worried about it at the moment. Joe Baklebeck, how about you?
Soybean prices are essentially at 18-month highs. If that's not a time to play catch-up in regard to your old crop marketing at the very least, then I don't know what is. So I would like to make sales in beans. For if you're behind, do it before all this stuff. Because I've seen buy the rumor, sell the fact. I've seen that play out 100 times, and this is set up for that. I don't know if that's what happens, but it's very possible. I've seen this scenario before. In corn, the prices aren't as good, relatively speaking. It's not as exciting. The funds are still short. I'm not as thrilled about selling corn, and I don't think there's necessarily as much downside risk in corn. So I may be on the side of waiting on corn sales unless you've got really good basis or something like that. But, I mean, the beans, when you're at an 18-month high in any commodity, you better play catch-up and get up to speed.
Well, as far as USDA's production number, I think it's absolutely worthless without a good December 1st stocks number. And unless you have a good December 1st stocks number, whatever production number they give us, as far as I'm concerned, it has a chance of being 10% wrong on either side of what they give us, because you got to have that December 1st stocks number to back out of it and to know exactly how many acres you harvested, what the actual yield is, what kind of consumption you had. So, and that December 1st stocks number looks like it's just going to be an estimate on top of an estimate. And I don't have any faith at all in the production number, but we will have to live with it. And, you know, I'm friendly. I think you can be friendly. You know, I mentioned, you know, I had a window between mid-December, mid-January. That's a selling opportunity. That's all I can really say. I think it's a selling opportunity. But I don't necessarily think things are going to go to hell in a handbasket until we get closer to spring. I think I'd be awful nervous, you know, going into March owning a lot of inventory, or April owning a lot of inventory, because I just have a feeling of quality problems. We're going to see a lot of different movement come into the marketplace in that time frame that could soften it up. And then maybe we might have a favorable spring and everybody gets planted. I'm sure nobody's going to wait around this year. I mean, as soon as that sun starts shining and the weather looks like it's breaking, the corn planters are going to go 100 mile an hour, you know, 24/7. So, I mean, we're going to get this crop planted real quick next year. Nobody's going to wait on anything. And so you know, the spring could be a little bearish. So I would want to kind of, you know, make sure I get all my cash flow needs kind of covered, or at least put some downside price protection on inventory that I want to carry into the summer. I think the best selling opportunities are going to be later fall. I think it's going to be more of a typical election year type rally that we used to have years ago, where prices strengthen going into the fall election.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. I think Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. I'll start with you today.
Like, you know, I think we said earlier in the show, I think, you know, the next couple, 3 weeks, you know, maybe even 4 weeks, you're going to really tell the tale here going into the springtime of what, where prices are going to go. You know, I think getting some stuff, corn, beans, both old crop and new crop, Getting some of those pushed out the door, I think, is probably would be pretty good. And then because even if we do see a trade deal signed and done, we still have to actually see some, you know, product moved, promises kept, and, you know, stuff being shipped out the door. So I'd use these rallies, you know, your profitable levels, hopefully here, you know, I would definitely take a look at these and get something done.
Joe Baklevic from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee.
I'm, like I said, I'm kind of worried about the bean market. Just if you don't get the confirmation that we need in that trade deal, I think there could be some downside here. The rally has been a short covering affair. There's not a lot of speculative buying in this thing right now. There's not a lot of people taking on length, I don't think. I think that it's shorts who are nervous about what could transpire. We hope it's positive, but I'm kind of skeptical. On the corn side, you know, we still got export problems. Ethanol's gotten a lot better. Hope that continues, and the production numbers on the 10th, I mean, that's a toss-up. Nobody's got a clue.
Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas.
Just an observation. I see it quite interesting that around the world, people want to accumulate $100 U.S. bills, whether they're putting them in their mattresses or their freezers or what are they doing with. But the Fed has to constantly print more money to keep the market liquid, and there's just a hoarding of cash, U.S. dollars, throughout the world because of the negative interest rates that we have in Europe, and I don't know how that is going to play out someday, but we're definitely printing enough money to keep everything liquid, and I think that's part of the key driving force behind, you know, new highs in the stock market. Just like today, we're up 300 points or so.
And Jerry Goodell from Midland Research in Chicago, Illinois. Your final word.
Well, yeah, definitely. I think people mentioned already, and I kind of have the same little feel that some opportunities just above us here in these markets to get to some cash movements after the kind of strength we've had here in all, if you want to say, the last 6 or 7 weeks or from the fall low or whatever it might be. Wheat particularly has been an amazing one, and we haven't talked about wheat. The one thing we all know is that the USDA's January wheat seeding is going to be lower than the trade average guess. Only twice has it not been since like the 1980s, so from there. But same time is that it's probably has the least amount of fundamentals in this rally that we just had. And so anything in the, you know, Chicago wheat in the 575 area and above is definitely probably a sale. Even new crop out there is the same kind of value at this point from there. Kansas City is going to be quite interesting. That's where the biggest chunk of wheat won't be planted this time around because of the weather and the fact they had more corn and soybeans out there. Corn and sorghum and soybeans that they didn't get harvested until after the wheat should have been planted. From there, I like the idea of like doing a 10% opportunity in both, most likely in the bean side of things here on new crop, on some rallies, and particularly staring at $10. Wow, that's not too far away here on this stuff. So that being the case, that wouldn't be a bad move, selling some stuff up under $10 if that came along. And from there, corn is the most interesting one. I think the fundamentals could be the most surprising. As we all know, on this whole thing, the corn side of things is going to be the most difficult for the USDA to come up with a solid number we're going to believe one way or the other. But I don't know, maybe if they look at last year's situation, they'll be more cautious about what's in the bin and what's not in the bin after the big adjustment we had last September. So from there, but $4 is still staring us in the face on the spot to March, and it could go to 410. I don't think that's impossible from there, but somewhere in that area is an opportunity to get it 75% done. I don't think it's a place that feel, you know, like you need to be carrying a lot of inventory all the way into next summer.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program online anytime you'd like on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our panelists this week have included Jerry Goodell of Midland Research, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.